Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up? Happy Saturday. It is Arrowhead Pride's best of the week. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, and we are bringing you the best of the Arrowhead Pride podcast network for week four, heading into the Chiefs Sunday game against the Philadelphia Eagles. We, of course, will start with Monday's Out of Structure, as Ron Kopp and Matt Stagner want you to know that last week's loss was not on the defense. We continue with my editor show, myself and John Dixon, our marinated takeaways from the game. That's at the 10-minute mark. We continue with the Great British Chiefs show as we take our first look at the Philadelphia Eagles around the 30-minute mark. Show and BK are after that around minute 40. When the Chiefs have the ball, what do they have to do against the Philadelphia Eagles? And we end with a portion of our interview series with Evan Washburn, the CBS Sports sideline reporter who will be on this game. What are the Chiefs' storylines to know heading into this crucial get-right game against the Philadelphia Eagles? Let's get started, of course, with the guys from Out of Structure. This is Arrowhead Pride's best of the week.
This Chiefs team, though, is just as close to 3-0 as they are to 0-3. There have been three tough games, three games that could have gone either way based on a handful of plays. Here we sit, 1-2. It's not where you want to be, but it's week three.
Yep. And we've seen these Andy Reid teams really succeed in September. And it's really just weird to see them not succeed in September. But there is always a bad stretch from an Andy Reid team in the season. It happens every single year, even when they're winning, like last year. There was a pretty ugly stretch of play down the end of the season. I think we could all agree. And so it is kind of funny to kind of overreact like this. But I think that's just part of being a fan. And we appreciate you guys sending in your questions. We're going to get to another one right now and start getting deep more into this game. Real quick, just to say it, so in case you missed it somehow, the Chiefs did lose to the Chargers 30-24 at Arrowhead in week three. Chargers improved to 2-1. Chiefs are 1-2. Chiefs are last place in the AFC West by themselves. But to get specifically into this game, Let's start playing the blame game a little bit. From Learn Black History at Don's Politics on Twitter, he asks, do you blame the offense or the defense? I think he's meaning for this game specifically. Me personally, it's the offense. He says five turnovers. I think it's just four. I believe it's just four. But Stags, just give me a little bit. Just give me probably a minute or two. I'm just going to kind of go on a little bit of a rant. Hopefully not too big a rant. But here's the thing, guys. I'm going to preface this by saying the defense has not been great. It's not been good. It's been bad. The defense is bad. No doubt about it. There's been no pass rush. Linebackers have been pretty crap without Willie Gay. Secondary, especially yesterday, could not cover a single person. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen terrorized the secondary. That's all true. The defense has not been good. They need to be better. That said, we should never have expected the defense to carry this team. The defense should not be winning this team games. And it just seems like some of us are kind of expecting that for whatever reason. We are an offensive juggernaut. This is an offensive team. This is a team that needs to be carried by the offense. You have supposedly the best quarterback in the entire NFL. You have supposedly the best play caller in the NFL. You have supposedly the best wide receiver, the best tight end in the NFL. That should result in more wins in these late game situations. Not four turnovers, not in a stretch of series between the Ravens game and the Chargers game, five turnovers in six series. That's crazy. That's insane. So real quick, let's break it down real quick on the defense. They allowed a season low in first downs, total yards, and only 77 rushing yards yesterday. To start the game, they forced a 3-and-out. Guess what the offense does on the next drive? Interception. The next drive, the defense forces another punt. The offense gets the ball at the 50-yard line and then fumbles it and gives the ball back. And eventually, obviously, they score a touchdown. The offense fumbled on third possession, too. Okay, the defense played pretty well at the beginning of the game. First drive of the second half, they forced a 3-and-out. Obviously, week one, it didn't matter because the defense forced an interception. Good on them. but they had a chance to seal the game with 3 minutes left, and they had to punt. Week two, they fumbled the ball away out by with Clyde. And then obviously this week, with 2 minutes and 14 seconds left, they get the ball tied. All they need is a field goal. They could just wind down the clock, get a field goal. Touchdown would be awesome. They can't even get three plays without throwing an interception. This is where I'll come off the soapbox. I just want to get that rant out. But I just cannot imagine. I could not fathom watching that game yesterday and thinking that the defense needed to do more to help and win that game. The defense did everything you could expect against a good Chargers offense, one of the best young quarterbacks in the entire NFL. And the offense could not get it done. They need to. They are an offensive juggernaut, and they need to finish these games more. Stags, I'll hand it off to you. Is there anything you want to react on that sense of blaming the offense more for this loss than the defense?
Whew. Take a deep breath, Ron. Take a bow.
Yes.
That's exactly how I feel about it. If I told you before this game that the Chiefs would hold the Chargers to 77 yards rushing on a 3.5 per carry average, Justin Herbert would have under 300 yards passing, and the Chiefs would run for 186 yards on 6.2 yards per carry, you would think that the Chiefs win this game 9 times out of 10, if not more. And I thought this tweet from Matt Derrick yesterday, I just saw it pop up on my timeline again, and it's, if you read this tweet with no other context, not knowing how this game ended, what do you think would have happened? Matt Derrick says, it's 24-24. The Chiefs' red zone nightmare is over. They held a team to a field goal. Very timely defense. Patrick Mahomes now has 2:14 left to win the game. You would feel pretty good about where this game ended up. If you give Patrick Mahomes the ball back with 2:14 left on the clock, they weren't out of timeouts. They weren't in a rush. They literally just turned the ball over and gave this one away. It happens. I hate to see it happen 2 weeks in a row, but I don't know what we expect from this team coming into this season. You know, a lot of people will point to the final score and say, well, the Chargers scored 30. This is another week where they gave up more than 30 points. They wouldn't have scored 30 had Mahomes not thrown an interception with less than two minutes left in the game. That should have been the drive that ended the game this week, just like there should have been a drive that ended the game last week. Both of those games should have ended up dramatically differently. And it's all based on untimely turnover and bad plays on the offensive side of the ball, unfortunately. So yeah, you can't blame one side. It's a team. It's absolutely a team effort. They lost because they didn't make enough plays on both sides of the ball. The defense, I'll say, they definitely could have gotten at least one more stop in the red zone. And maybe they could have forced a turnover. Those two things would have been helpful. In fact, my favorite stat of the week came from Nick Wright on a pretty epic rant that he had on the air. He talks about what are the odds of winning if you're -4 in the turnover category. So when you're -4 in NFL history, you have a 0.54% chance of winning. So that's not 54%. I'm talking 0.5% in NFL history. 0.5% chance of winning if you're -4 in the turnover category. Taking it a step further, if you have no takeaways, it's even worse. It's 0.44% of the time in history. No takeaways and you're -4, 0.44% of the time. The numbers are ridiculous. It is, you know, 33 wins against 741 losses when you're in the turnover ratio that the Chiefs were this week. Yes, Mahomes does unprecedented things. Yes, this team should be better than that. But when you turn the ball over, you lose. Podcast over.
We're out of here. No, I just want to make the quick point, too. The fact that the defense only gave up 30 points when there's 4 turnovers, especially 3 right off the bat, that's actually credit to the defense. With that high powered of an offense, if you're giving them 4 turnovers, they should be scoring a lot more than that, honestly. I just think that even points more to how the defense actually held their end of the bargain down. And like I said, we cannot expect this defense to win this team games. It was never supposed to be like that. This defense just needs to be good in situations. And I get it. They haven't been. The red zone, they've been awful. Fourth down, they've been awful. They've given up 5 for 6 on fourth downs this year. And offenses, Hitchens talked about this last night, actually. The offenses are going for more fourth downs because they know they can't just give the ball back to Mahomes. The defense needs to be better in those situations knowing that, and they haven't been. At the same time, this team is built around the offense. I already said it, so I don't need to go into it again, but this team is built around the offense. The offense needs to win this team games, and if they're not going to, then this team's not going to win a lot of games. But that's the whole thing. It's turnovers right now. That's easily correctable. And so that's why it's hard to be sky is falling kind of right now. But some of you all are.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon, coming off the Chiefs' second loss in a row. It doesn't even make sense to say. 30-24 to the LA Chargers. We've now had 2 days to think about it. John, as I always do, I'll let you take the first marinated takeaway from this game.
Yeah, after the game was over, in my piece after the game, I wrote some about the last two games. I wrote about how passer rating is a very predictive stat. But the other one that's really predictive for winning and losing is turnovers. And I think what we have seen in the Chiefs' three games so far is an unbelievably uncharacteristic string of games.
Yeah.
You know, the Chiefs were 8th in turnover margin last year, 7th in 2019, 6th in 2018, 2nd in 2017. Overall, during the time that Andy Reid has been the Chiefs head coach, this is from 2013 through 2020, the Chiefs are number 1 in turnover margin over those 8 seasons.
Right, right.
And right now, 3 games into this season, they are 26th in turnover margin. And here's another thing, too, that I found interesting about the game. The Chiefs have played in their history 36 games where they've had a turnover margin of -4, as they did on Sunday, or less. You know, they've given up more turnovers than they've picked up. In every one of those games, the Chiefs lost. Just one of those games was a Chiefs victory. So that tells you what you're up against when you're in a situation like that where you've given up 4 turnovers and haven't brought any in of your own. It makes it very difficult to win the game. And the Chiefs have rarely done it in their history, and they didn't do it on Sunday. But even at the end of the game, they were in it and had a chance to win without that last turnover. So I think that tells you something not only about how unusual this situation is for the Chiefs,
yeah,
and the likelihood that it'll change to the better here in the next few games, but also how good the Patrick Mahomes is, that in a situation like that, that he could actually be in a position to come back and win in the final drive of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think it actually, and I'll be careful here to say it, but it's actually impressive that the Chiefs were down 4-0 turnover-wise,
mm-hmm,
and were in position to win by 1 point. That's, yeah, incredible, really, yeah, in the sense of you have this margin and you put that margin in any game across the league, it might be a blowout, especially if the team is able to take advantage and you should not even be sniffing a chance to win it with, mm-hmm, 2 minutes to go like the Chiefs were. It didn't happen. Yeah. And so the turnovers cost them, and Eric Bieniemy had noted, look, you change that, it's a completely different situation, but it is what it is. They are a 1-2 team because of the turnovers. And I think, and this was my point that I'll, you know, parlay into yours, John, I think you're seeing a shift in strategy of how to play the Chiefs. We know about the aggressiveness, but after that Tyreek Hill 75-yard touchdown that completely changed the Cleveland Browns' chances, what you're seeing teams do is make sure that Tyreek Hill has extra attention and really taking out the deep ball altogether. And they say, you know what? If the Chiefs want to methodically check down to Travis Kelce, run screens, run orchestrated plays for Mecole Hardman and beat us in 10 to 12 plays, well, that'll give us 10 to 12 chances to turn the football over. And it worked, right? It worked. You're not really seeing the deep, deep gains, but the defense is leaving room for the Chiefs to play underneath. And then when Tyreek Hill's are coming across, that gives you an opportunity to knock the ball out. When Clyde Edwards-Helaire is about 10 yards in front of the line of scrimmage, as you're tackling him, that gives you another chance to potentially turn it over. And so
I think that there is a recipe. What's wild about this is the recipe is very, very hard to execute and succeed with.
Right.
The weird thing is we've seen outliers 2 weeks in a row. And so that has led to Panic City. And I just think we just need to relax because it's very hard to pull this off. Even though it's happened twice in a row, it's very hard to win this way. And like a team like the Eagles shouldn't. I say it every week, seemingly, and I'm wrong every week. But the Chiefs should blow this team out of the water next week, yeah, even with what has happened the past 2 weeks. We'll see if that happens. But you saw that what the Cowboys were able to do to the Eagles on Monday Night Football. That should happen again. And I will predict, and I believe it will, because eventually we're going to be right here.
Yeah, and going back to your point about taking Hill out of the game, if you're putting two guys on Hill to take him out of the game, well, that means that if he gets a pass, as he did on Sunday, there's a guy who's tackling him and there's another guy trying to push the ball out. You know, that actually makes it easier to force that turnover on Hill when you're double covering him that way.
And Hill to his point, and I don't blame him for this, but Tyreek Hill, if you watched, he is not a player who gets the pass on the sidelines and embraces contact. A lot of times he'll duck out. And not to say that I blame him, because what is a yard or two going to do, especially if you're past the first down marker? You'd rather have Tyreek Hill healthy because he's so key. But that that's on film, too. If you can just surround Hill with two guys and he kind of sees, look, I might be able to get maybe 2-3 more yards out of this. He just ducks out. And it is what it is. But that's a part of his game.
Right. No, I agree.
All right, John, what is your next takeaway?
Well, I thought that Edward Zolaire started looking like the guy we drafted on Sunday. I mean, we've seen spurts of this during his rookie season where he would dart through the line. But what I saw on Sunday was a guy that not only got 100 yards on the ground, the stats were great, 5.9 yards per carry. Everybody would be happy with that if that's what we had from Edward Zolaire all the time. But he looked the part. I thought so after the game, and the more I think about it, the more I think that that's right, that he looked like a guy who can get that job done. And I think it's also important to note that because he was doing that, the Chiefs were able to run the ball a lot more often than they have in the other games that they've played this season. On Sunday, they had 30 rushing plays versus 46 passing plays. That's actually a fairly high percentage of rushing plays for the Chiefs. And I think Andy Reid would have said after the game, we wanted to use the rushing more in this game, to keep the offense from, you know, getting crazy, that was part of our strategy. And they were able to make it work because Edward Zolaire was doing it. He was finding the holes when they were tackling him. He was dragging people down the field to get extra yards. You love to see that from running back. I thought he looked great on Sunday.
You saw some of the questioning after the game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and was there an emphasis to put more on the run game? No, it was what the Chargers were doing, and which a lot of teams are going to be doing, is taking the deep region away, what I just was talking about. And when they do that, you got to be willing to run the football. And the Chiefs are
take what they'll give you, which is another thing that Mahomes has been a lot better at this year.
Right. It's crazy because there are little intricacies where the Chiefs are better, but they just have not translated to wins.
Right.
So it's hard to compliment on them on those type of things. My next one, my second one here, bear with me, because I think we might just be focused a little too much on the red zone defense. And I tried to explain this a little bit after the game. I tried to explain it, my thought process here on the radio this morning. I think right now, the Chiefs are 11 of 12. They were able to finally get a red zone stop after 11 in a row trips that ended in a touchdown. That's not good. I'm not saying that, whatever, you shouldn't be concerned about that, because at some point down the road, again, there's going to be an opportunity to win a game with a red zone stop, and the Chiefs are going to need to do that. What I mean here is, so you're talking 11 of 12. I don't know what the percentage is of that, but it's high. What is it, 90? It's got to be 90 something. I don't know, 90 whatever percent.
It's above 90, yeah.
Now, you get, even right now, I mean, it's early in the season, you're able to muster up two or three red zone stops where you're holding them to a field goal on next game. All of a sudden, you're approaching the 20s in the league. You do that the next game, you're probably, 50% in the league. It's not going to take a lot of red zone stops, because just in general, it is hard to stop teams from scoring touchdowns in the red zone. We're only losing sight of that because the number is a ridiculous 100%.
Right.
What I think is becoming more important for Kansas City in the way that teams are playing them is the opposing 25 and the 50. And what I mean by this is once you're within the 20-yard line, a lot of times you're scoring touchdowns anyway. Now you're seeing teams across the board. It's not just John Harbaugh in Baltimore who has done this forever against every team. It's Cleveland. It is L.A., where you're seeing teams go for it on 4th and 9 in your territory. And so what you can do is if you're able to get stops, and we saw at the beginning of the game for the Chiefs, pin them deep in a touchback fashion, and then you really have 25 yards where you're in 3-down territory, because we have seen a drastic change in football, period, against the Chiefs now. Mm-hmm. Whenever a team is able to get past the 50, it's a lot harder for Brandon Staley to go and say, okay, it's 4th and 4, but we're on our own, 37. Can we really afford to go for this? Mm-hmm. You probably can't. Now you're on the Chiefs 37. Easy decision. So what's more important? Is it the red zone defense where more often than not you're going to surrender points? Or is it this magical window, which we don't even have a name for, in Kansas City between the 25 and the 50? To me, that's the new point of emphasis for the Chiefs because of this insistence on going for it on 4th down.
You know, you and I had a brief conversation about this the other day, and I'll make the point now that I made then, that the whole concept of the red zone as being from the 20-yard line is kind of arbitrary. If you go back and look at the history of this thing, there was a statistician for the Broncos who just kind of picked that number out of the air. Let's start keeping track of how we do inside the 20-yard line, both on offense and defense, and it's become this thing that that people hold up as this big standard. And it's not that there's no value in the statistic, but really, what if you're going to choose a spot where it ought to be something we keep track of, it ought to be around the 30, 35-yard line. That is the point where you can no longer kick a field goal.
More than the red area for me, like to me, what I'm most worried about the defense right now, red area seems meaningless. What matters to me right now is on 4th and short, when these damn teams are insisting that they go for it, you have to stop. You have to start getting some stops, because that'll be put on tape. And then all of a sudden teams won't be doing that so much anymore, because it's going to lead to swings. And then in that 25 to 50, just prevent the decision from altogether, because no way is a team going to want to go for it on 4th and 5 from their own 28-yard line, right? So early drive stops to me are imperative at this point in the new fashion the teams are playing the Chiefs.
Right, I agree. And going back to your point, I think that 30, 35-yard line is the point where it becomes a no-brainer decision for an opposing team to go for it on 4th down instead of kicking a field goal.
And the same should be for Kansas City because of the other reason, because the offense is so good. And we are seeing Andy Reid, I think, lean into that more. He wasn't when Mahomes first took over. He certainly wasn't in the Alex Smith days. But now I think the messaging has gotten across. You have Mike Frazier, the analytics guy for the Chiefs. He's probably like, Andy, it's probably like 67% if we go for this, as far as winning the game. And at that point, you're like 2/3. That's enough.
I would not want to have Mike Frazier's job to be finding all those nuggets all the time and whispering in Andy's ear about
it. With your 21 years of experience, you're incorrect here. Just so you know. Yeah. And I have the numbers to prove it in my hand.
Yeah.
Okay, John, your final takeaway, marinated takeaway from this game.
Yeah, after the Ravens game, I was making the point that, giving up a lot of rushing yards isn't a big deal in the NFL. There's a lot of teams that focus on rushing the ball and they can have success, just like Marty Schottenheimer's Chiefs did in the early 90s. And you can win a lot of games that way, but you can't do well against really good teams that way. And that's why, why the Chiefs would love to be better against the run. They can afford to give up rushing yards and still be in a position to win a whole lot of ball games. They've done that. Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback, not since Alex Smith was the quarterback, since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback. But they cannot afford to give up as many passing yards and as many touchdowns as they did against the Chargers on Sunday. That is something that they cannot do. That's something they got to fix. I'd even put that up higher than the red zone issue for the very reasons that you mentioned, Pete. Is they got to get those stops done earlier, and that comes from being better against the pass. And on Sunday, they just weren't.
Tre'Davious Ward Appreciation Day. We sort of, I wouldn't say poo-poo is the right terminology, but we kind of just overlook what Ward means to this team. He was a little bit of a surprise to be out in this game. We thought he might end up playing. He was injured, and then Rashad Fenton goes down, and then you're down to Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker in his first action. I thought Baker looked pretty good, but again, he got the penalty called on him. I didn't agree with it. I don't think it cost the Chiefs the game. I think it was more the four turnovers, which we talked about already. But you'd like Ward to be there. I think that Ward Hughes Sneed combination is where the Chiefs are throwing their confidence. I think Baker did put some good tape out there. We'll see if he now pushes for more playing time, maybe over a Hughes, but the more healthy cornerbacks, goes without saying, the better the Chiefs are going to be. All right. My final takeaway here is just a reality on the AFC. And I think the takeaway that I have about the playoffs, it's like, it's so early, but one of the things we discussed on this podcast was how these games count just as much as week 16 and week 17, where the playoffs are right in front of you. And I thought the Chiefs right now, and this is the only thing they've lost, in my opinion, they've made their road way more difficult when it comes to clinching a bye week, because you already have two losses. You know, we think that that team is probably going to be around 13-4, if not 14-3. So now you're giving yourself one or two losses of margin for error, and your two losses have come against teams that could be ahead of you. If the Chargers win the division, that's obvious they're ahead of you. If the Ravens can find a way to continue winning, they're going to be up for that AFC bye. They already have the head-to-head tiebreaker. And then, you know, the AFC record right now is 1-2. It's your exact record. And so you've hurt yourself for the bye. Now, here's the good thing. The two teams that are undefeated in the conference are the Raiders. And let's chill on the Raiders. They won two overtime games. If everyone is saying, okay, the Chiefs could be 3-0, the Raiders could easily have the same record as the Chiefs. Whenever you play in overtime, you never know how that's going to go. So if you get the ball first, you score a touchdown, you win. The other team, you have to have it. We know that well in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So to me, and guess what? You already have two games left with the Raiders. You can give them those two losses that you've already suffered. So that's fine to me. And the Broncos have just had the easiest schedule known to man. They're the other undefeated AFC team. So the good thing here, if you're looking for bright sides, is there's a lot of season left in front of you. You can still give both the Raiders and the Broncos the two losses to make that up. You can take care of that yourself. And to me, every other team in the AFC has one loss already. And that is a little bit lucky considering your real slow start. But if the Chiefs just can put three or four wins together and all of a sudden you turn around and you're 5-2 with a win included against the Buffalo Bills, you're feeling a lot better about the season because of the way things have sort of played out. I know this is going to sound weird, but if you're picking undefeated teams that you'd want to be undefeated at this point, the Broncos and Raiders are pretty good teams to pick because you, for the most part, own them. Yeah. Own them. And what I'm saying is it's all right there. Like I said, I think playoff bye is now going to be interesting no matter what, because you have to be clearly the best team in the conference. And these games that can go either way, typically if you're going to be the bye team, you have to get those games. And the Chiefs have surrendered these close games. So now it's, can you start piling up these wins, put yourself back in better position and play yourself back into that? But I think, like I said, it's a grand messaging of, there are so many reasons to feel good about the team. If they clean up the turnovers, that's a step forward. And there's just so much football to go, and things have played out in a way where you can still kind of get yourself back into this.
I think you're making really good points here. I would be a little cautious about the Raiders and the Broncos at this point. I mean, you're absolutely right. The Chiefs will have the opportunity to make up those games against those two teams because they play them twice. And that's the both the upside and the downside of your division rivals. But, you know, the Raiders really could be pretty scary if Derek Carr has a good year. If he can be as good as he was last year, they're going to be a team to watch. I don't think they're going to be contending to win the AFC West. But
one thing I can give the Raiders about Derek Carr is this way that he's playing early in the season, where he is fearless and throwing the ball downfield. In past years, he's played two games like that against the Chiefs. And so I've always said, if he could just play like that against the rest of the league, the Raiders would have a lot better of an opportunity. And he's doing that for once. I disagree completely on the Broncos. The Broncos, our power rankings are going to come out. They've played the three worst teams in the league. Giants, Jaguars, Jets. Those are the three worst teams in the NFL. I don't know how they got this golden schedule. Yeah. They're about to get the Ravens, the Steelers, the Raiders, the Browns. Washington has been shaky, but then they get the Cowboys. So that's 5 of 6 games that could very easily be losses for the Denver Broncos. So
their toughest part of the season is the second 5 games instead of the first 5 games.
The first 3 games have just, if the Chiefs had ever lost to one of those three teams, okay, I'm with you. Let's panic. The Giants, the Jaguars, or the Jets at this point, you can't do it. And so the Broncos have had that kind of play into their hands a little bit there.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a 2-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Good stuff from Out of Structure and the Editor's Show, if I do say so myself. Now we continue on with the guys from the Great British Chiefs Show. Let's take a look at these Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, then. Should we look at the look forward? Let's put it all behind us again and look forward. Week 4 against the Eagles and Andy Reid's old stomping ground. Mm-hmm. Can the Chiefs finally overturn something here and go on a 50 burger run? Because I'm convinced that the Chiefs are going to go lights out, balling out in this game. But you said to me you weren't that convinced that Andy Reid would do that against his old team.
No, I think the Chiefs will go out and score a lot of points, but this idea of the Chiefs having to go out and beat the Eagles and score 50 points is just ridiculous. Like, if they have to score 50 points to win the game, like in a Rams-style match, then 100% Andy Reid will keep the foot on the gas and accelerator. And
don't talk about petrol around here, Tom.
Yeah, not today, yeah. we'll just keep the hammer down and they'll score points. But if the Chiefs are winning this game comfortably, there's no way that Andy Reid runs up the score against the Philadelphia Eagles. He just has too much respect for that city. And I just can't see it. If the Chiefs are winning like 35-17 in the fourth quarter, I just can't see him say, "Right, go on, Pat, keep going." Just
really
finish him. Can't see it, like, I just can't see it happening.
Finish them.
Yeah. Little man in the corner pops up and goes, "Whoopsie."
No, I can absolutely see it. I really can. I think Andy Reid's probably probably had a bit of time to chill out while he's been laid out on his hospital bed drawing up plays. And he's just thought, you know what? Let's just go for it. And clearly, Patrick Mahomes has said that in the press conference as well, that, you know, this is the time now where they just think, right, the back's against the wall. We've just got to go for this now. And I just think, what a perfect way to make a statement against your old team. Slap a 50 burger on it.
A perfect way to make a statement than beating an NFC East team. Wow, what a statement to be made. But saying that, we're sitting here saying, and we're congratulating the Bills for how well they've been playing recently, and they just went into Washington and absolutely destroyed that NFC East team. So yeah, why not? But I still reckon that Andy Reid will probably play cards close to his chest if the Chiefs manage to get a big lead. As if it's required, they will absolutely score points on the Chiefs. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Chiefs are right. Let's go out there. Let's show the world what this offense is capable of. Don't you sleep on the Kansas City Chiefs, because on our day, we are the best offense in the league. So maybe, just maybe, Mecole Hardman goes off for 200 yards. DeMarcus Robinson goes, Josh Gordon, you're not having my spot in this offense. And he goes off for 100 yards. Maybe Tyreek Hill can just sit down and chill out whilst watching Byron Pringle go for 50 and Juice Fountain go for 75 yards. Maybe, just maybe. Maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't fumble the football. Maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire runs for 150 yards. Maybe Trey Smith pancakes every single Philadelphia Eagle that he can. Maybe.
I'd love to see that.
The Chiefs go out and put on an offensive show. Maybe Patrick Mahomes completes a no-look pass. Maybe Patrick Mahomes catches a pass. Who knows?
Catches his own pass.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I'd like to see that for sure. Is there anything that you think the Eagles can bring and slow down this offense? Or do you think that this Eagles team is just, or the defensive side, should we say, is not really something to really worry about in this game?
I can't name a single Philadelphia Eagle defender that's going to play on Sunday.
Analysis, mate. That's brilliant. I love it.
Ed Graham, didn't he? But he's injured.
Yeah.
It's bad, isn't it? Like,
it is bad. It is bad, mate. I must admit, when I was asking that question, I was thinking, God, I don't even know this. I'm asking Tom this. I'm throwing him under the bus here.
It's bad, isn't it, that we're sitting here going, oh, you should all listen to this podcast, but when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles, we know absolutely nothing. Like, I've got to do 5 questions of Bleeding Green Nation on Sunday, on Thursday, so I need to do some research before I get into that one. Do I think the Eagles can stop the Chiefs? No, I don't.
Really not.
The only team stopping the Chiefs at the moment are the Chiefs, and I might not know any of their players, but no one's sitting here saying the Eagles are this worldy defense that can stop any offense, and the Chargers couldn't do it, the Ravens couldn't do it, so no, I don't think the Eagles can do it. Now, if we're going to talk about the other side of the ball, do I think the Eagles can score points on the Chiefs? Absolutely they can. Yes, they can. Like, Jalen Hurts isn't—he's not playing great, but he's not playing terribly either. But he's a mobile quarterback. Mobile quarterbacks should be able to beat this offense, beat this Chiefs defense, because over four downs, this Chiefs defense is just not great. Like, the average yards per play for opposing offense is far too high. If they want a first down, they are getting them at will, it seems like. So if I'm the Eagles, I'm going to go with the tactic that the Ravens have gone with, the Browns have gone with, the Chargers have gone with. Just go for it every single play they can, every fourth down. Keep your punters, keep your kickers off the field, and just try and play fight fire with fire. And if you manage to create a couple of turnovers on the Chiefs, then even better.
I've just been looking at their QB room, and they've got Jalen Hurts, obviously, Joe Flacco. Ooh. And Gardner Minshew, the Tash.
Gardner Minshew. The Steelers should have gone for Gardner Minshew, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should have, shouldn't they?
They really should have. Like,
I'm so funny. It's so funny they haven't as well. And
let's talk about the other Pennsylvania team whilst we're here, shall we?
Yeah.
The Steelers are bad. They are so bad. Ben Roethlisberger needs to retire today. I
thought he did on that play. See that play where no, there's nobody around him, and he threw this ball. I thought, what, did he lose his walking stick or something? It just fell over.
Oh, just like, as soon as like you saw like the inactives for the Steelers on Sunday, you were like, well, okay, the Bengals are going to win this game. like, no chance. Like, he's just such a bad team. But yeah, Gardner Minshew, a bit of Minshew mania. Yeah, that could be fun. Like, do you reckon Jalen Hurts is the guy in Philly? Do you think they feel like he's the guy?
I don't think they're convinced totally yet. It's almost like a Tua situation for me.
Yeah, I get
it. Not completely, like, the Dolphins were never really kind of convinced on Tua. I know they drafted him and they threw him in there, but they're still not convinced on him. And I think if they could trade him away, they would do. And I think Jalen Hurts is almost in that kind of category at the minute. He's in the Tua category for me.
Yeah, that's fair analysis.
Yeah. It's good analysis, that, Brad.
I agree with you. I feel like if they could, if they're in a position like this time next year, and I don't know, let's say they go really bad for the rest of the year and they end up with a number one pick and Spencer Rattler sitting there, I can absolutely see a situation where, like, the Cardinals went with and they scrap their first round pick and go for another one. I can definitely see that situation. I like Hurts. I think he's exciting, but do I see him as the franchise quarterback of the future for the Eagles? Probably not. Do I see him as a starting quarterback in 5-6 years' time? Probably not. There's so many quarterbacks coming out of college at the moment, like every year. Like, look at the amount of first-round quarterbacks that are coming out of college every year. Like, they can't possibly be room for all of them. Not all of these guys are going to be franchise quarterbacks. And I feel like Tua, I feel like Jalen Hurts is probably in that category as well.
Yeah. Is there anybody else on the offensive side that you think, they could cause us a bit of a problem, especially with this defensive scheme that we've got at the minute?
I'd like to say Miles Sanders, but they're not running the football. I think they had three running attempts against the Cowboys. Like there's us saying, like, fight fire with fire and air the ball out against the Chiefs. If the Eagles go what they did on Sunday or Monday against the Cowboys, and they're gonna do so. I can't say Miles Sanders. Like it's a shame because I like watching that offensive line work for the Eagles. I still enjoy watching Jason Kelce for what he's able to do at his age and him being Travis's brother. Yeah, for sure. I like watching Jason Kelce play. But outside of that, no, there's like, who can I point out?
I think you're right. I think looking at the Eagles, they almost don't seem to have anything there that really can be the Chiefs' kryptonite, which has been in the last few games. You know, the running game has been very difficult for the Chiefs. That's been their kryptonite. But this Eagles team doesn't seem to have that. They're almost kind of not even matched up to the Chiefs. That's what it feels like. So I think you're right. I think there's nothing really that's blown me away, I think, in this game from the Eagles side of things. I mean,
this podcast is definitely being snippeted and put together on an Eagles fan page if we lose this if we lose this
there's
game,
nothing all they can do.
Defensive superstars of the Eagles come out and like, yeah, do you know who we are? And it's going to be all over the fan forum. It's
good. All right. As we do every week, when the Chiefs have the ball, as they face the Eagles this week, who they better beat. When the Chiefs have the ball, let's jump into this. Like, and I think you kick it off right there. They should be fine overall. It really should be fine. They have been fine. They're averaging over 30 points a game. They've still been one of the best offenses, top six in the league in yards. They've just shot themselves in the – I mean, they literally turned the gun on themselves over and over again and shot themselves in the foot, many of the turnovers being in scoring range, either in the red zone or in field goal range. They've shot themselves in the foot. They've got it. These turnovers, they've got to stop, or they would be 3-0 right now.
They, right now on the year, are 5th in points scored. They're 6th in total yards. They are averaging 7 yards per play. They have 25 first downs per game. Like, everything about what we're watching right now screams the Chiefs' offense has been really good. Unfortunately, there's those 6 turnovers. And more specifically, the 4 straight drives between the Ravens game and then last week against the Chargers, 4 straight drives ended in a turnover, and 5 out of 6 drives ended in a turnover. That's what's got to get corrected. And the reason why I'm still really high on the Chiefs' offense overall is because those are fluky. I don't think you're going to see the rest of the season Clyde Edwards-Helaire consistently turning the football over. I don't think you're going to see on the season Patrick Mahomes finish with like 20 interceptions on the year, which is what he's on pace for right now. That is not what Patrick Mahomes does. He has been a little bit lackadaisical with the football. He's made at least 2 plays that I think if you asked him afterwards, he would say to himself, yeah, I was trying to do too much there. The pass that he did to or threw to Marcus Kemp, or
well,
he
that's
was
on Marcus.
It's on both. Marcus should have caught it. Marcus should have caught it. Also, Patrick Mahomes, there's no reason to no look there, and it was a bad ball. It was a bad ball. It was behind him. It was up high, and it was a wide open throw. You got to make that throw. And if you're Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in the world, I'm going to judge you based on the fact that you're the best quarterback in the world, and it was unnecessary. It resulted in a turnover. You got to be better in that spot. I don't think he's going to make those kinds of mistakes consistently this year, and therefore, I think the offense is going to be fine. And I think it starts this week against a Philadelphia defense that has been taken advantage of by just about everybody. I think this is a get-right game for your offense.
Well, the thing is the issue is the turnovers, and it's very fixable if they care to fix it. If they care to come in and be serious about it and have some focus about this. Because you're right, I stand corrected. I 90% I've always thought was on Marcus Kemp. But, yeah, Pat, there's no reason to no look. It's silly, and it's you're above that. Like, come on, man. You can look at him. No reason. There was nobody around to look off. There was nobody around him. Just throw the ball to him so he knows you're going to throw it to him. All right? Now Marcus should have caught it. It hit you in not just one hand, but two of them. So he should have caught it. But the last one was just absolutely pathetic. I mean, and as you said, I judge him as the best in the game. I mean, once again, 2 weeks in a row, he felt the need to do Jameis Winston. And Jameis didn't even do Jameis stuff. Well, hell, actually, he did. He just got away with it, and the guy caught it in the end zone. But he just did Jameis stuff, and he's doing Jameis stuff in the fourth quarter, and that's inexcusable 2 weeks in a row. So yes, it's very fixable. But if they want to, that's my thing, and they need to go ahead and say, all right, we're going to focus on that, because the lackadaisical play and the decisions they're making when the game's on the line. It's just inexcusable and beneath a team at the level and the games that they've played in before to make those decisions. So it should be a good right game, and they need to clean up these turnovers, because that is the biggest bugaboo for them. Or I don't know how much of we'd be sitting here in desperation to go get Josh Gordon averaging 35, 36 points a game, which they should have been if they would have just scored or if they would have just held on to the football last week against the Chargers. So the biggest thing is, I'm with you, it's very, very fixable, but they need to start showing some signs that they're okay with fixing it.
Yeah, and I think a long portion of this is going to go to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, whether that's in the passing game or in the running game. He looked really good last week, Ron, and I know you noticed the same thing. I thought it was one of his best games that we've seen in his Chiefs career. I think it was that and the Bills game. And I think you could make a case that last week was actually more impressive, because the Bills were without a vast majority of their starting defensive line in that game last year. It was just a weird game overall as well, because of the COVID stuff and everything that was taking place. I think you could make a case last week was his best game as a Chief. And I expect him to continue doing more of the same going into this one against Philadelphia, because the Eagles have not been good against opposing running backs. Last week, they got absolutely shredded by the Dallas Cowboys. The Chiefs' offensive line is legitimately good, and they've got some ass kickers up front who should get after it in the running game. And I think Clyde's in for another big week this week in the running game for sure, but I hope more so in the passing game as well.
No, that's the other key to me when the Chiefs have the ball, as you just talked about it, is Clyde. I thought it was his best game since Buffalo. That's what I was going to say. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous that he's not involved in the passing game more. He caught two balls for 9 yards, and he took one for a touchdown. Like, he's more than a screen throw running back. I watched him in LSU and even a little bit last year, where he's capable of doing more than just catching screens or swing passes. And they got to get him more involved. But I like the way he bounced back after that rough turnover. And he ran the ball hard. I mean, he ran it hard. And even the turnover he had, which was costly, but it was at least his, was trying to get extra yards, bouncing and spinning off of people, one of his best runs, and then he fumbled it. But it didn't stop him. He continued to come back and wasn't tentative the next time he got the ball. So I think he was he's a big key in this game, and I love the way – and hopefully this is him jumpstarting a continuance of what he did last week. And they should take advantage of the Eagles.
We talked about how you'll enter this production meeting on Friday, where you get to have these conversations, intimate conversations with the Chiefs and the coaching staff. And we know about the Andy Reid storyline. What else really interests you from a Chiefs perspective?
I think, Pete, it's how do you toe the line offensively between aggressiveness and embracing all that makes Patrick Mahomes special, Kelce special, just that whole unit, Tyreek Hill, with also not being reckless. And that's something we've touched on doing games over the last couple of years, and they've done such a good job of towing that line. And look, fumbles to me are a little bit different than interceptions, but just as you now sit at 1-2 in the division doing what it's done based off of the way Las Vegas is playing, Denver's playing, you don't want this offense gripping the wheel too tight, if you will, mm-hmm. but there needs to be an acknowledgement that we need to get back to the basics and maybe playing a little bit more on schedule. So getting a sense from Patrick and from Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, Travis Kelce, those guys, when we speak with them, I'm curious what terminology they'll use or yeah. how they'll characterize it, because I do know that they really value what they have, as they should, but there has to be an acknowledgement that it kind of gotten away from us the last couple of weeks.
One of the storylines that's a little Kansas City specific at this point, and I think we've seen it now the first 3 weeks of the season, is any time an opposing team on offense gets past the 50-yard line, they're going to go for it on fourth down. Do you sense this becoming a trend? What do you make of this phenomenon that is just teams going uber aggressive against the Chiefs?
Yeah, I feel like our crew, and this would have been 3 years ago, saw it the first time. It was when Baltimore came in there in Kansas City and was just going for it on every fourth down, going for two. I mean, some of the math, it felt wonky in the moment, but then when you went back, and I'm not huge on the analytics just because math makes my brain hurt, but I do trust that it's
an important. We're the same. We're in the same boat on that. Yeah.
It's an important aspect to the game, so I'm not downplaying it, but I think Kansas City is well aware that that's just part of their life every Sunday. And while I'm sure it's something they plan for because they plan for everything, I'm not a believer that it really impacts the way they play offensively. Now, defensively, and I know Steve Spagnuolo spoke to this on Monday, they need to probably prioritize more time and practice with those fourth down situations, those short yardage situations, and maybe even longer yardage situations in terms of fourth down defense, because teams are going to maybe go for it on fourth and four, fourth and six, in areas of the field that conventionally it's not the case. So that's really the only area I would think it would require tangible change, if you will, if you're Kansas City. It was the game where I remember specifically afterwards, it became apparent that teams are going to play Kansas City differently. And Baltimore was, I think, at the forefront of that. And then did it again this past Sunday, a couple weeks ago.
Say the cliche, the copycat league. We hear it on every single show.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.